All right, so let's look at the single slit experiment again. And an experiment done with waves, which exhibits a property of waves called diffraction. How many of you have studied diffraction in your physics studies so far? How many have not? Never seen diffraction? Okay, a couple. Okay, so we'll talk a little bit about diffraction. And those of you who have said you've studied it, I'm going to ask you to explain it. Okay, so instead of having a source of particles, we have a source of waves. Okay, and these waves are emitted, say, they come out like this. Okay, they're, well, I mean, I could draw the whole spherical wavefront, but whatever. I'm just drawing a part of the sphere, spherical wavefront, that moves outwards like this. And these spherical waves, they encounter a single slit like this. And they pass, and most of those waves, they're just going to hit the barrier and they're going to bounce off. These waves over here, this part of the wavefront is going to hit the barrier over here and bounce off like that in that direction. Okay? But some of the wave will pass through this barrier. Okay? And we have an observing screen over here. So we're sitting at this screen and we will see waves coming at us. And what we're going to be measuring is the intensity of the waves. How big is the fluctuation? Maybe they're water waves, maybe they're sound waves. They're sound waves, we'll measure how loud they are, okay, as at different points along this screen. Okay, so again, we'll label this with x, and the central point is x equals 0. And now, let me ask you, suppose that, well, what do I expect to see here, first of all? Suppose that the wavelength is very small. This is the wavelength, by the way. So each one of these lines denotes a wave crest. And these wave crests are expanding outwards like this as they move. And they move at some speed, C, speed of sound or speed of water or whatever. Speed of waves, I'm always just indicating with the letter C. Okay? And this is the wavelength. This is the distance between two neighboring wave crests. And as these wave crests move out, that distance remains the same. So they just go like that. Okay, so what am I gonna? What sort of a thing am I gonna see here? Suppose that the wavelength is very, very small. So we're dealing with, say, very, very small compared to the size of the slit. Okay, a good example is sunlight coming in through a window. Okay, so sunlight, the wavelength for light is what? How big is it? Very small. Okay, so it's the distance between my tightly pressed together fingers. Okay, so very, very small, and compared to the size of the window. So if that's the case, then my waves look like this. They're extremely closely centered like this. And these waves are passing through this window here. And what do I see here? Where does the sunlight hit? Yeah. Right. So right where you'd expect it, OK? So following lines of sight between the two edges from the source past the edge here. Okay, what you would expect, and so this is the shadow region, and this is shadow again. Okay, so what you would expect is an intensity of waves that looks something like this. Okay, it's basically broad, so it's basically sunlight hitting this entire range over here. I shouldn't have drawn that there. So we have sunlight hitting here, but no sunlight hitting here. Okay, so we see a pattern which looks like this. And what I'm drawing here is actually the square of the amplitude of the waves. So the amplitude of the wave squared. Okay? So waves, you know, of course, are plus and minus. Okay? And so when I square a wave, then a plus becomes a plus, but a minus becomes a plus. Okay? So what I'm doing is I'm just squaring the amplitude of the waves, and that's called the intensity. So just the intensity of the sunlight is large here, and then just drops to zero in the shadow region. So now what happens if I were to increase the wavelength? So instead of using light, I use a lower frequency of electromagnetic radiation. So I use, say, infrared or go down to radio waves, that sort of thing. What's going to happen to those waves as they pass through this slit? Can someone describe what's going to happen? Yeah. Right. So instead of so in the case of the sunlight, we had just this. OK? Okay, but if we lower, if we increase the wavelength, then we find that those wave crests here actually extend into the shadow region. Okay, and so it's said that the wave diffracts. Okay, it spreads out, okay, such that the intensity of the wave on the screen here spreads out. Okay, so now some light can hit here, or now some sound can hit here, depending on the kind of wave we're dealing with. Okay, so it looks something like that. Okay, so for example, if you're standing out, if you're standing in the bistro, and I'm yakking away here, yak, 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 you can hear me, even though you're not in the line of sight. Okay, so here's me, yak, yak, yak. That's the door to the room over here, and here you are in the bistro over here. So you're not in the line of sight, and yet you can still hear me because sound waves diffract through an aperture, diffract through a slit like this. Okay, and so they can, sound waves can bend around corners. Light waves can bend around corners. Any kind of wave can bend around corners. Can anyone explain why that happens, how that happens? Yeah.
Well, in this example, or in the door example, like your slit acts as like a new like wave propagation point. So then like at every corner, if you want to call it that, like a new wave will begin, and then it'll just propagate from there.
Yeah, so that's called Huygens' principle. So a guy called Huygens figured that out way back when. And what happened to the eraser?
The eraser is out.
Oh, there. Okay, so you might want to Google this, get some more information on this. But basically, the picture is something like this. Here is our single slit here, and here is a wave, successive wave crests passing through this slit. So when the wave crest is in the slit over here, what it does is it acts like a at every point on the wave crest acts like a new source of waves, okay, a spherical source of waves. And these guys go like this, and so on. And when you add up all those wave crests, you get this wave. And then on this wave crest, each of the points on those wave crests acts like a new point source, and you have little waves coming out. So they all add up. And so what you get is this. You get a diffraction. Instead of just being like that, it bends wider. It spreads out. Okay? So I'll let you look that up on Google or whatever. Okay, so that's what happens here. Now let me just indicate some conditions here. So when the wavelength is small, we see an intensity pattern which looks like this. So this is for small wavelength. Okay, so like light going through a window. But for a wavelength that is long or large or comparable to the size of the slit, then we see this spreading out. So this is for large. For example, sound through the door and all that kind of stuff. Okay? Right. Okay, so let's compare these two pictures here. We're comparing that picture with that picture there. And we find that there appears to be sort of at least loosely a relationship between the probability pattern of hits for an electron and the intensity pattern of waves, okay, and in fact, this the pattern there is identical to the pattern. The patterns you get there are identical to the patterns you get here, okay, and so the first thing it suggests is that we identify wave intensity with particle probability. So it's very important to notice this here is a wave concept, wave intensity. And and we are identifying that with a particle idea. Okay. So somehow, we are, at the end of the day, what we are going to do is we are going to use wave ideas to describe the probabilistic behavior of electrons. The second thing that we notice is that in this experiment, when the wavelength is small, okay, when the wavelength is small, we notice that there is no waves go into the shadow region. Okay, what condition is analogous in the particle case? Large p. Okay, so small lambda, we get this square sort of pattern here, nothing in the shadow region. That's the same as for large p. We get nothing in the shadow region. So small wavelength seems to correspond, if we were to try to make a correspondence between those two pictures, small lambda corresponds to large momentum, and vice versa. Large momentum, in the wave picture, we see a lot of spreading. Under what conditions do we see a lot of spreading in the particle picture? Small momentum. Okay, so when lambda is large, p is small. When lambda is small, p is large. That suggests that there may be some relationship between the lambda in this picture and the p in this picture. What kind of a relationship? Inverse. Okay, so it suggests, or we guess, something of this form, that lambda, that the lambda in the wave picture might be related to the inverse, 1 over the momentum. And this is a proportional. So lambda is proportional to 1 over p, some proportionality constant. Okay. I'm saying guess here because that's what you do in physics. Nature is deeply mysterious. We just don't know how it works. And everyone, and most of the time, you know, we come across those day-to-day situations, but then we do an experiment like this double slit experiment. We see something totally bizarre like this, and we try to make sense of it. Okay, or this single slit, this spreading and so on. And so we're just sort of guessing that there's some relationship like this. And then at the end of the day, we verify that guess by doing experiments. And that gives us more confidence that, yes, maybe something like this is true as we do more and more experiments. Okay, so that's how physics works, and we're in the process of doing physics. Okay, let's now look at the double slit experiment, but instead of having particles passing through the double slit, we're going to have waves. Okay, and this brings up a phenomenon characteristic of waves called interference. Okay, so the setup is then this. Instead of particles coming out of our source, we have waves. So here they are. Successive wave fronts coming out and moving to the right. Okay, and then they encounter a barrier with two slits. And they hit our screen. And here is x equals 0. Okay, so now what we're going to imagine is that we have turned the wavelength up. Okay, so we've cranked the wavelength. We've made a long wavelength waves passing through our slits so that there is a great deal of diffraction. There's a great deal of spreading through each of the individual slits. Okay, so as these wave fronts, most of these wave fronts, you know, most parts of the wave fronts will just bounce off. But the part of the wave front that passes through this slit, instead of just going like line of sight like that, it's going to there's going to be significant diffraction. And so it looks something like that. So it has spread quite a bit. And similarly, the part of the wave front that passes through the lower slit there, what we called slit number 2, is also going to experience serious amounts of diffraction. It's going to spread a lot. Okay, so what we have, so both of them spread such that there's a significant overlap between this set of waves and that set of waves. And where those waves overlap, we have a phenomenon occurs called interference. Okay, so when one, say a crest here meets a crest here, like at that point, we have a double crest. Okay. When a trough is, so here is just terminology here. This is a crest, this is a trough down here. Okay, negative. So a trough, if this is a crest and that's a crest, then halfway in between is a trough. So when a trough from this set of waves meets a trough from this set of waves, say at this location, we have a double trough. Okay? And so double crest, double trough means the intensity is large. Okay? Whereas if we have a point where a crest from one, say here, meets a trough from the other, there's going to be cancellation. Okay? And at this point over here, at that instant of time, there will be no wave. It'll just be zero intensity. Okay, so what we find is there are certain places where there's cancellation and so on, and the intensity pattern for the waves that we observe at the screen looks like this. Okay, in fact, it looks exactly like that. Okay, so. So one thing I just want to point out. Okay, let's put this up here. Oh, yeah.
And more weather more interference near the zero, because there's everywhere interference, and the intensity is everywhere the same, isn't it?
Okay, so there's more interference, positive constructive interference over here. Because, sorry?
Why?
Because if you look at, say, a wave and getting from here to here, okay, part of the wave crest here, so a wave crest gets emitted. Part of that wave crest goes through the upper slit and then is diffracted and ends up over here. So part of the wave crest goes along this path. And part of the wave crest, this part down here, goes along this path. And then gets diffracted through here and ends up going over here. Okay? So for waves can get to this point by either going through that path, through the upper slit, or through the lower slit. Okay? And if you look at, just by the symmetry of this picture, you can see that the path length from there to there is the same if you go via the upper slit or if you go via the lower slit. They travel the same distance. Okay, so that little bit of wave crest and that little bit of wave crest emitted at the same time here, which are traveling at the speed of sound or water or whatever, will travel the same distance, and so they will arrive at the same time. So you will have wave crests from here arriving at the same time as wave crests from here, and you will get double crests, and you will get lots of amplitude here. Whereas if you look at a point like this, now the diagram's going to get a bit messy. For waves to get to this point, they need to take one possible path is this path. Another possible path is through the lower slit, like that. Now, if you compare the difference between the path difference, okay, the length of this path from here to the upper slit to there, to the length of this path from here through the lower slit to there, you'll see that it's a difference in length. They're different in length, right? So when two wave crests here, two bits of wave crest start at the same time and move along here like this. Okay? The time that's going to take for them to get there is different. This is a longer path. By the time this wave crest reaches that point, this wave crest, because it has traveled a greater distance, will be behind. It'll be only over there. Okay? And so what might be hitting it is actually a trough. So you have a crest and a trough adding up to get zero there. I'm not answering the question.
The walls on the crest near the zero higher than everywhere else. So are the measure where actually?
Oh, just because as you go over here, the total distance gets longer, and waves as they spread out, they decrease in amplitude.
But aren't they everywhere? The waves.
The waves are everywhere. But if I have a wave, if I have a say a point source of waves like this in a pond, okay, and I'm dipping my finger in and out of the pond, then I have big waves near the point at which I'm creating the waves. But as those waves spread out, get further and further and further, the amplitude of the waves gets less and less and less. right? I mean, you don't see a mile away from you're dipping in the pond, you don't see big waves like this anymore, right? You see these little things. So the amplitude decreases the further the distance is. And so that's why this just, these peaks get slightly lower as you go further away from the central mass. In fact, you asked this question about this thing. And so the same thing is happening there. Okay. All right. So so let's look at this in a little bit more detail. There's a very important point here. So far we have guessed that there's a relationship possibly between wavelength and momentum, an inverse relationship. And that maybe lambda is somehow proportional to 1 over momentum. Turns out that we can actually determine that proportionality constant very accurately in an experiment, in a double slit experiment of this type. Okay, so the way we do that is this. Suppose that the wavelength that I'm using here is very small. Okay, so the waves are like this, very, very close together. Okay, what do you expect this pattern to look like?
Close together.
Okay, so we see the whole thing scrunched up. So when we go from light to dark to light to dark, it'll happen more rapidly. Okay, so what we expect for small lambda is a pattern like this, very tight like this. So this is for small. Okay. If we make the wavelength large, what happens to this pattern? It stretches out like that. Okay, so we're going to see. So here's the central mass, now it's still the same, but now it spreads out like that. Okay, and what we're trying to do is, so this is for large lambda. So what we can do is we can conduct this experiment and vary the wavelength here, and so vary the tightness of this pattern until that pattern exactly matches this pattern. So suppose we've done an experiment with a given momentum, and we get some pattern of probability of hits that looks exactly like that, where the first minimum occurs at some distance d away from the central maximum. Okay, so we want to get exactly this pattern. So what we do is we just vary the wavelength from small to large until we get exactly the right pattern, which matches the probability pattern for the particle case. Let's just say like that, where the distance from the central maximum to the first minimum is exactly d. So this is wavelength just right. Okay, so the point is, for any given momentum, we get a certain pattern. Then we conduct a similar experiment using the same apparatus here, but use waves. Play with the wavelength until the pattern we get exactly matches the pattern we got for particles. Okay? And that will give us a particular wavelength associated with a particular momentum. And that allows us to determine the proportionality constant. So we adjust the wavelength such that the intensity, the amplitude squared, exactly matches the probability pattern. Okay? And when that happens, there's a definite for a definite p, there's a definite lambda, and so we can determine the relationship between lambda and p. Okay, and so there's a proportionality constant here, which we're calling h, and we can then determine that proportionality constant. Okay, and if you do it numerically, and if you do this, you get experiments give you h is 6.626 times 10 to the minus 34, and the units are joule seconds. Okay? So the conversion factor to go from momentum here to a wavelength is a joule second. Okay? And the numerical value is this 6 times 10 to the minus 34. What is this constant called? Okay, so this is Planck's constant. What is this relationship called? The Broglie wavelength. So this is okay, so people say that that's pronounced de Broglie. Okay, I don't get it, but so we'll go with de Broglie. Okay, so are we all okay here? All is clear? All right. So, because this is important. So we've come up with a relationship between a wavelength and a momentum. Okay, so we've looked at the results of these crazy experiments, and we've said that, okay, what's happening with the electron, what's happening with the particle, is just totally bizarre. Okay, when I have this double slit situation like this, with just one slit open, electrons for sure should hit there, or do hit there. With just the other slit open, electrons also hit there. But with both slits open, suddenly they no longer hit at that point. Okay, and so you get some weird pattern like this. Okay? And then we used our familiarity with waves to say, hey, I recognize that pattern. That's just the double slit interference pattern with waves. Okay? And then we established a correspondence between the momentum of the particles and the corresponding wavelength of the waves. So what's happening here is something like this. We're saying, I don't know what the electron is doing. Okay? In getting from here to here, this very fact that with both slits open, it no longer hits there, that very fact just totally baffles me. I have no idea what an electron is anymore. Okay? I mean, I know it's a particle here and it's a particle there, but I have no idea what it's doing in getting from here to here. It makes no more sense to me. Okay? And I also realize that I can't actually predict in advance where a given electron is going to hit the screen. So I'm dealing just with a probability pattern, P of x. And what we're saying is that you can actually calculate this P of x, okay, by doing a similar experiment with waves. Okay, so I have particles with some momentum P, and I want to predict what's the probability pattern. Well, the way that I do that is I just take my momentum P, plug it into here, H divided by that P gives me a number, lambda. And it says that if I do an experiment with waves instead of particles, with that wavelength lambda, I will get a wave intensity pattern which exactly matches my particle probability pattern. Okay? So what we're doing is we're saying, I don't really know what the electron is doing. All I can talk about is probabilities. And I'm using wave concepts to describe or to calculate those probabilities. Okay, so what we have here is sort of like the analog, the quantum analog of F equals ma. Okay, so F equals ma applies to things like baseballs and cars and things like that, right? If I throw a baseball here, it starts with some initial position and some initial velocity, and I say, oh, well, gravity is acting, and so I know what its acceleration will be and so on. So I use F equals ma, and I can predict the trajectory of that baseball. That's how physics works, right? We have some law of motion, F equals ma, which tells us, which allows us to predict the behavior of objects, in this case a baseball or a car or something. Okay? But we notice that kind of thing doesn't seem to be happening here. Something really weird is going on here. Okay, and so what we end up with is not F equals ma. What we end up with is something is this thing, this de Broglie relation, some wave relationship between lambda and p. So what we're going to try to do, this is really interesting, what we're going to try to do is use this newfound relationship, try to use it like we would use F equals ma, to learn something about the behavior of electrons in various situations. Okay, so we scrap this, we try to use that to understand how electrons behave. And the simplest example of this, and the most interesting, simplest example that leads to really interesting results is called the particle in the box. So we're going to take a particle, be that an electron or a neutron or a proton, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what it is. As long as it's small, you know, atomic or subatomic, we are going to be able to use that lambda equals h over p to learn something about its behavior.